A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's in the middle of an apartment move, and he's been doing a lot of it himself with a hand truck and a platform trolley. And the thing that struck him wasn't the physical effort. It was the obstacle course. Tourists gawking at buildings, cars idling in the loading zone, everyone fighting for the same sliver of pavement. And then he remembered Venice. He ordered a tripod from Amazon.Italy while he was there. Partly because he needed it, partly to see if it would actually arrive. Freight barge, pickup network, delivery crew with a specialized trolley. And now he's asking, if Venice can run a modern city with zero cars and zero streets, why can't we redesign city centers with dedicated lanes for cargo? A fast lane for industrial trolleys, a slow lane for hand trucks and apartment movers, plus a cycling lane. Separated by purpose, not just by speed. Has anyone tried this? Could it work?
I love this question, because it sounds like a thought experiment, but it's actually about something really concrete. That moment when you're wrestling a loaded hand truck through a knot of tourists who stop dead in the middle of the sidewalk to photograph a balcony. That's not just annoying. It's a design failure.
It's a microcosm. You've got three different use cases colliding in space that was only ever designed for one of them. Pedestrians who are essentially at leisure, cargo that needs to move from A to B, and cars that are parked or idling or creeping along looking for parking. Nobody's happy.
The timing on this is interesting because the tension is getting worse from both directions. On one side, e-commerce keeps growing. More packages, more deliveries, more vans double parking. On the other side, cities are pushing car reduction policies harder than ever. Congestion pricing, low emission zones, pedestrianizing streets, both of those are good things individually, but they're on a collision course.
You want fewer cars in the city center, great. But the stuff still needs to arrive. The restaurant still needs its flower delivery. The person moving apartments still needs to get their bookshelves from point A to point B. And right now, the only tool we have for that is a delivery van that takes up 15 square meters of street space and sits there for 10 minutes.
Or a hand truck that takes up half a square meter and moves at walking pace, which is what Daniel was doing. And his observation, which I think is the core of this, is that the hand truck experience wasn't bad. The physical part was fine. It was the obstacle avoidance that made it miserable.
He described it as almost pleasant light exercise. The problem wasn't the cargo. It wasn't the distance. It wasn't the weight. It was the gawking tourists and the cars.
That's a solvable problem. That's not a fundamental limitation of moving things by hand. It's a space allocation problem, which is what urban planning is supposed to solve.
The question Daniel's really asking is, what if we took the street space we currently give to cars, and instead of just handing it all to pedestrians and cyclists, we carved out dedicated lanes for cargo movement? Different speeds, different purposes, physically separated, like a highway, but for hand trucks.
The reason this isn't just a fun hypothetical is that Venice exists. It's not a model village. It's a city with 50,000 permanent residents, schools, hospitals, restaurants, hotels, retail. It has an economy, and it moves every single thing, groceries, furniture, construction materials, Amazon packages, without a single car or a single street.
That's the existence proof. If Venice can do it with canals and footpaths, then the question isn't, is it possible? The question is, what would it take to adapt that model to a city with streets instead of canals?
The adaptation isn't straightforward, but it's not impossible either. The canal in Venice functions as the freight artery. The hand carry from the canal side drop point to the door is the capillary. In a modern city, the dedicated cargo lane would be the artery, and the last 50 feet into the building would be the capillary. The lane replaces the canal.
Which is a wild image. A dry canal running down what used to be the parking lane, with a stream of electric trolleys and hand trucks moving at different speeds.
The thing is, we're already seeing pieces of this emerge. DHL has a pilot in Utrecht where parcels arrive by electric boat and then transfer to cargo bikes for final delivery. New York City just updated its Freight NYC plan with 30 smart loading zones that use sensors and time-of-day pricing. Barcelona's Superils restrict interior streets to 10 kilometers per hour for all vehicles. None of these are full cargo lane systems, but they're all reaching toward the same idea. That freight needs its own designated space and rules.
The Barcelona one is interesting because it's the closest to what Daniel's describing, but it's also the clearest example of what's missing. They slowed everything down to 10 kilometers per hour, which is great for pedestrian safety. But they didn't separate cargo movement from leisure movement, so you still have delivery vehicles and strolling pedestrians sharing the same slow zone. The conflict is just happening at lower speed.
Which is safer, but not more efficient. And efficiency matters, because if deliveries take too long or cost too much, businesses suffer, and then the whole car-free model gets political pushback. See, we told you it wouldn't work. The cargo lane idea is partly about making car-free centers politically durable.
That's the part nobody talks about. The opponents of pedestrianization always point to delivery access as the Achilles heel, and they're not entirely wrong. If you don't solve for freight, you get delivery vans idling on the sidewalk, or businesses refusing to locate in the pedestrian zone, or residents who can't move in or out without a logistical nightmare.
Daniel experienced that nightmare firsthand. He was doing something that should be straightforward, moving belongings from one apartment to another, and the city's design made it 10 times harder than the physical labor itself.
Let's actually walk through what he's proposing. You take a typical city center street. Right now, it's probably 2 traffic lanes, 2 parking lanes, and 2 sidewalks. The cars get the majority of the space. In his vision, you eliminate most of that. What's left is something like a cycling lane, a fast cargo lane for electric assist trolleys and larger deliveries, a slow cargo lane for hand trucks and apartment movers, and then pedestrian space. Maybe as wide as a conventional street, but divided by purpose.
The key word there is divided. Not just paint on the ground, but a curb, or a bollard, or a grade change. Because the whole point is that these different uses shouldn't be dodging each other. The person moving a sofa on a hand truck shouldn't be weaving through a crowd of tourists. The delivery cyclist shouldn't be ringing their bell at pedestrians who've drifted into the bike lane.
It's the swimming pool model. Fast lane, medium lane, slow lane. You self-sort by speed and purpose. Nobody's colliding.
Venice has been doing exactly this for centuries, just with water instead of pavement. The Grand Canal is the highway. The smaller canals are the arterial roads. The fondamenta, the walkways alongside the canals, are where loading and unloading happens. And the calle, the narrow alleyways, are pedestrian only. The system sorts movement by mode and purpose.
The episode Daniel's asking for is really about whether we can translate that Venetian logic to dry land. Can we design streets not just for cars versus pedestrians, but for different classes of non-car movement? And if we can, what would it actually look like? What are the trade-offs? And has anyone gotten close?
I want to dig into the Venice model first, because I think most people imagine it as a tourist theme park and don't realize it's a functioning logistics network. The Amazon delivery that Daniel mentioned, that's not a novelty. That's a real system that handles thousands of packages a day.
Let's do that. Start with Venice, then look at what other cities are trying, then work through what a cargo lane system would actually require. And somewhere in there, we should talk about what Daniel's hand truck move tells us about where the friction really is.
The knock-on effect. Because if you actually build cargo lanes, you don't just change how packages move. You change what equipment gets invented, what buildings look like, which businesses locate where. The lane creates a market.
That's the part I find genuinely exciting. This isn't just traffic engineering. It's infrastructure that reshapes the city around it.
Let's get into it. Here's what actually happens when you order something on Amazon.Italy to a Venice address. There's no van that pulls up to your door. There's no door for a van to pull up to. Instead, Amazon operates a network of pickup points, lockers, and partner shops scattered through the city. Your package arrives at one of the mainland distribution centers, gets loaded onto a freight barge, and travels through the canals. The barges run at night and early morning when the waterways are quiet. Then, at the canal side drop point, a delivery crew takes over.
This is the part Daniel was fascinated by, the hand carry.
It's the part that makes the whole system work. The delivery crews use these customized two-wheeled trolleys. They're called Carelli, that are designed specifically for Venice. They're about 60 centimeters wide, maybe 120 centimeters tall, with big pneumatic tires that can handle cobblestones and a folding platform for getting up and down steps. Because every delivery in Venice involves bridges, the city has more than 400 of them, and almost all of them have steps.
The trolley has to be narrow enough to fit through a calais. Some of those alleyways are barely wider than a person's shoulders, but robust enough to carry a load of packages up and down staircases all day.
That's the key innovation, and it's not the barges. The barges are just boats. The innovation is the last 100 meters protocol. Every single package, whether it's a tripod or a microwave or a case of wine, gets walked from the canal drop point to the recipient's door by a human being with a trolley. Over bridges, through narrow passages, up to fourth floor apartments with no elevator.
Which sounds inefficient until you do the space math. A delivery van in a typical city occupies about 15 square meters of street space and sits there for 10 to 15 minutes per stop. A person with a Carello occupies maybe half a square meter and keeps moving. The van is 100 times the footprint for the same job.
That's before you factor in the circling. Studies of urban delivery patterns show that vans spend up to 30% of their route time looking for parking. In Venice, there's no parking to look for. The barge docks, the crew unloads, and they walk. The delivery either happens or it doesn't, but there's no searching.
Venice proves two things simultaneously. One, that a modern city can function without any vehicle larger than a hand trolley in its interior. And two, that the hand carry model isn't a romantic throwback. It's space efficient in a way that vans can't match.
It's not just packages. Construction materials move by barge. Furniture moves by barge. The hospital has emergency boat access. When someone moves apartments in Venice, they hire a transport boat and a crew with trolleys. It's the same system scaled up.
Which brings us back to Daniel's question. If Venice can do this with canals as the freight arteries, why can't a city with streets do it with dedicated cargo lanes as the arteries?
The canal is just a right-of-way that's reserved for freight. It's physically separated from pedestrian space. You can't accidentally wander into a canal. Well, you can, but you'll notice.
The ultimate bollard.
The cargo lane proposal is essentially saying, what if we created a dry canal? A physically separated lane running through the city center that's reserved for wheeled cargo movement. The fast side for electric assist trolleys making commercial deliveries, the slow side for hand trucks and people moving apartments. And then completely separate from that, you've got your cycling lane and your pedestrian space.
The separation is the whole game. Daniel's insight from his move was that the physical labor was fine. It was the dodging that made it hard. If you remove the dodging, you've removed the problem.
The obstacle problem is interesting, though, because it's different in Venice than it would be in a cargo lane city. In Venice, the obstacles are fixed. Bridges with steps, narrow calle, the occasional stray cat. The delivery crew knows exactly where every bridge is. The route is predictable.
Whereas in a city center with cargo lanes, the obstacles would be other people. Pedestrians who step into the lane without looking. Cyclists who swerve. Tour groups that expand to fill available space like a gas.
That's exactly why the physical separation matters. Paint on the ground won't cut it. You need a curb, a grade change, something that says this space is for moving cargo, not for standing in. The same way a bike lane with a concrete barrier works 10 times better than one with just a white line.
Which brings us to what already exists. Because Daniel asked if any city has tried this, and the answer is pieces of it, everywhere, but nobody's put the full system together.
Barcelona's superrails are the closest in spirit. In the Sant Antoni neighborhood, they took a grid of streets and turned the interior roads into essentially shared spaces with a 10 km/h speed limit. Delivery vehicles are restricted to a 7 to 10 in the morning window. But here's the thing, they didn't build any cargo-specific infrastructure. The delivery van still comes, still double parks, still blocks the narrow lane. It's just doing it more slowly and during a restricted window.
They solved the speed problem, but not the space problem.
And the space problem is the bigger one. A van is still a van, whether it's moving at 10 km/h or 50. It still takes up the same footprint. The Super Illa model basically says deliveries can happen, but only when pedestrians aren't around. The cargo lane model says deliveries happen in their own space, and pedestrians have their own space, and they don't need to schedule around each other.
Tokyo has a different approach. They've got what are essentially road trains for pedestrian zones. Small electric tugs that pull a chain of cargo trailers through shopping districts during off hours. It's not a lane, but it's a dedicated vehicle type for a dedicated purpose.
London's congestion-charged zone has timed delivery windows, which is another piece of the puzzle. But again, it's a time-based solution, not a space-based one. You're scheduling around the conflict instead of designing it away.
The pattern is pretty clear. Cities recognize that freight and pedestrians don't mix well, and their solutions are either time restrictions or speed restrictions. Nobody's built the physical lane.
I think part of the reason is that cities tend to treat last-mile delivery as one monolithic problem. But it's actually two completely different things. You've got bulk freight, pallets, appliances, construction materials, restaurant supplies, and you've got parcel delivery. Boxes, envelopes, the stuff that fits on a hand truck. They need different speeds, different equipment, different drop-off protocols.
That's a really useful split. The fast cargo lane handles the bulk stuff. The slow lane handles parcels and apartment moves. And they're not competing with each other any more than they're competing with pedestrians.
Right now, both of those are being handled by the same vehicle type, a delivery van, which is oversized for parcels and undersized for pallets. It's the worst of both worlds.
The minivan of freight. Nobody's happy.
Here's the trade-off that I think Daniel's question implicitly raises, and it's a real one. If you're carving out dedicated cargo lanes, that space has to come from somewhere. In his vision, you're replacing car lanes and parking lanes. But in a lot of cities that are already pedestrianizing, that space is being converted to sidewalk cafes, street trees, public seating, playgrounds. There's a genuine tension between logistics efficiency and placemaking.
That's the pushback I'd expect. The urbanist says, we finally got rid of the cars, and now you want to put a freight highway through our plaza?
It's not an unreasonable objection. If you've got a beautiful pedestrian street with outdoor dining and shade trees, running a cargo lane through the middle of it changes the character. Even if the trolleys are quiet and electric, they're still moving through what was supposed to be a people space.
Though I'd argue that the delivery vans are already moving through it. They're just doing it badly, at the wrong times, while blocking the sidewalk. The cargo lane at least contains the freight movement, instead of letting it sprawl.
That's the counter-argument, and I think it's a strong one. The question isn't whether freight exists. It does, and it has to. The question is whether you design for it or pretend it's not there and let it degrade the pedestrian experience anyway.
The pretend it's not there approach is what we have now. The van pulls up onto the curb. The delivery driver hazards their lights on and hopes for the best, and everyone steps around it. It's not a solution. It's just an unacknowledged mess.
Venice is the opposite of that. Venice acknowledges freight completely. The canals are freight infrastructure first and picturesque tourist attraction second. The fondamenta, those walkways along the canals, they're not just for strolling. They're loading docks. The city doesn't pretend that deliveries aren't happening. It builds the delivery into the fabric of the place.
Which is maybe the most useful reframing here. A cargo lane isn't an intrusion into the city. It's an acknowledgement that the city runs on stuff coming in and out, and that movement deserves design space rather than ad hoc space.
Once you design for it, the equipment evolves. That's the second order thing I keep coming back to. Take the Fraunhofer Institute in Germany. They built an e-trolley prototype last year. 40 kilogram payload, 15 kilometer range, 25 centimeters wide. That's narrower than a typical doorway. It's designed for exactly the kind of narrow European streets we're talking about. But right now, it's a solution looking for infrastructure. You put that e-trolley on a mixed-use sidewalk, and it's just another obstacle. You put it in a dedicated cargo lane, and suddenly it's the right tool for the right space.
The lane creates the market for the device. Without the lane, the e-trolley is an expensive curiosity. With the lane, it's a fleet vehicle.
The market would segment naturally. The fast lane gets the e-trolleys, the electric cargo bikes, the small autonomous delivery robots that Starship and Nuro are already testing. The slow lane gets manual hand trucks, platform trolleys, apartment movers like Daniel. You self-sort by speed and payload, same way a highway sorts by speed.
Daniel's move fits perfectly into the slow lane. He's got a hand truck loaded with boxes, moving at walking pace, not in a hurry, just needs a clear path. He doesn't need electric assist. He needs to not dodge tourists. That's the entire ask.
It's such a modest ask when you strip it down. A strip of pavement, maybe a meter and a half wide, physically separated from foot traffic, running the length of a city center. That's it. That's the infrastructure. Everything else, the equipment, the delivery protocols, the scheduling, evolves around it.
The second thing that evolves is real estate. If you've got a cargo lane running past your building, the ground floor becomes more valuable for certain kinds of businesses.
This is one of those effects that sounds abstract until you think about how a hardware store or a grocery actually operates. They get deliveries constantly. Pallets of canned goods, bags of cement, stacks of lumber. Right now, in a pedestrianized zone, those deliveries are a headache. The truck has to arrive during a narrow window, block the street, unload fast, and hope nobody complains.
If the cargo lane runs right past the loading entrance, restocking becomes routine. The pallet comes off the electric trolley, through the back door, done. No truck, no window, no complaint.
Ground floor retail along cargo lanes tilts toward inventory, heavy businesses, hardware stores, grocery stores, restaurant supply, even small-scale manufacturing. Meanwhile, the pedestrian-only frontages, the streets without cargo lanes, become premium for restaurants with outdoor seating, cafes, bookstores, boutiques. Businesses that benefit from foot traffic and don't need frequent heavy deliveries.
You get a hierarchy of street types. Cargo streets and leisure streets. They connect, but they don't compete for the same space.
That hierarchy already exists in Venice, just in a different form. The shops that need frequent restocking tend to locate along the wider canals where barges can dock easily. The boutiques and cafes cluster in the pedestrian-only calli. The city sorted itself around the logistics network centuries ago.
The cargo lane isn't just a traffic solution. It's a zoning tool. It shapes what kind of city you get.
Which brings us to the part Venice hasn't fully solved either, the last 50 feet. The cargo lane gets the delivery to the curb. But how does it get from the curb into the building?
Venice solves it with human legs. The Corello crew walks it to the door, up the stairs, done. But that works because Venice is low-rise and dense. Most buildings are 4 or 5 stories. A modern city with apartment towers can't just hand-carry everything up 12 flights.
This is where the cargo lane idea forces building design to adapt. If you know every block has a cargo lane running along it, you start designing buildings with standardized loading docks at lane level. Not a loading dock for trucks, a loading dock for trolleys. A wide doorway, a level threshold, maybe a dedicated cargo elevator.
Or you embed a locker network in the lobby. The delivery crew drops packages into a bank of lockers at street level. Residents pick them up on their way in. That's already how a lot of new apartment buildings handle packages. But it becomes the default, instead of the exception.
New York's Freight NYC plan actually gestures at this. Those 30 smart loading zones they converted in the 2025 update, they've got sensors that track occupancy and time-of-day pricing that incentivizes off-peak deliveries. But they're still designed for trucks. The conceptual leap is shrinking the loading zone from truck scale to trolley scale.
A loading zone that's a meter wide instead of 3 meters wide. You can fit 3 of them in the space of 1 truck bay.
If you standardize it. If every new building on a cargo lane street is required to have a trolley accessible loading entrance, then the whole system becomes predictable. The delivery crew knows exactly where they're going, exactly how they're getting in, exactly what equipment they need.
That predictability is what makes Venice work. The Corello crew knows every bridge, every staircase, every narrow passage. The route is fixed. There's no, where do I park or how do I get in? The ambiguity is zero.
Zero ambiguity means faster deliveries, which means more deliveries per shift, which means lower cost per package. The economics actually work.
I want to come back to Daniel's move for a second, because it's the concrete test case for all of this. He's moving apartments in a dense city center. Right now, he's wrestling a hand truck through tourists and around parked cars. In the cargo lane world, he loads up his hand truck, steps into the slow lane, and walks. The only thing he has to navigate is occasionally passing someone else in the slow lane, which is trivial.
That's the difference between a move that takes all day and leaves you exhausted, and a move that takes a couple of hours and leaves you mildly exercised. Same physical labor, completely different experience, because the space was designed for what he's doing.
The obstacle course isn't inevitable. It's a choice we made by not designing for cargo.
This is where I think the cycling infrastructure parallel is really instructive. In the 1990s, the idea of a protected bike lane, a physically separated lane just for bicycles, was considered radical, expensive, politically impossible. Cities that proposed them got mocked. Where are you going to put them? Nobody bikes anyway. It'll never work.
Now, Copenhagen has more bikes than cars entering the city center every day. Protected bike lanes are standard in cities all over the world. The thing that was radical 30 years ago is just how you build a street now.
Cargo lanes could follow the exact same adoption curve. Phase 1 is timed delivery windows and shared slow zones. That's where we are now, with Barcelona's super ills and London's congestion charge. Phase 2 is physically separated lanes on a few pilot streets, probably in cities that are already aggressive on pedestrianization. Phase 3 is a full network, with standardized loading entrances and purpose-built cargo equipment.
The pilot is the key step, and the pilot doesn't need to be ambitious. One cargo lane. Measure what happens to delivery times, to pedestrian conflicts, to business satisfaction. The data either supports scaling up or it doesn't.
The metrics are straightforward. How long does a delivery stop take? How many pedestrian conflicts per hour? How do businesses on that block rate the change? You don't need a PhD in urban planning to run this experiment. You need a city council member who's willing to try something for 6 months.
The bollards are cheap. The paint is cheap. The political capital is the expensive part.
That's where the data from the pilot buys you the next step. If you can show that deliveries got faster and pedestrians felt safer, the opposition loses its main argument. It'll slow everything down, becomes testable, and you've tested it.
The second actionable piece is for the individual. Daniel's experience confirms something that a lot of people don't believe until they try it. Moving apartments in a dense city with a hand truck is viable. It's slower than a van, but it's not impractical.
There are ways to make it dramatically easier that have nothing to do with cargo lanes. Daniel figured out the hand truck part, but the timing matters too. 6 to 8 in the morning, before the tourists wake up and before delivery vans start circling. The streets are empty. The obstacles are gone.
That off-peak window is the poor man's cargo lane. You don't get physical separation, but you get temporal separation. Same effect, different mechanism.
The third thing, and this is the one that takes a bit of planning, is scouting the route. Not just the shortest route, but the route with the fewest pedestrian bottlenecks. Avoid the plaza with the fountain where tour groups congregate. Avoid the street with 4 cafes and outdoor seating spilling onto the sidewalk. Find the back route that's boring and functional and empty.
The route that nobody photographs. That's your cargo lane.
If you're doing this repeatedly, if you're making multiple trips over a weekend, you learn the rhythm of the street. You learn which corners get crowded at which times. It's the same thing the Venice Carello crews do, just without the centuries of institutional knowledge.
The third big takeaway is more of a mindset shift. The cargo lane concept isn't a blueprint you can copy and paste into any city. It's a framework for thinking about how street space gets allocated. Every city has its own pattern of where deliveries actually go. What a transport planner would call cargo desire lines.
Desire lines are one of those planning concepts that's incredibly useful once you know it. It's basically the path that people or goods actually take, as opposed to the path the street grid wants them to take. You see it in parks where people wear dirt pads through the grass instead of following the paved walkway.
Every city has cargo desire lines, the routes that delivery drivers naturally take. The streets where trucks cluster in the morning, the loading docks that handle the most volume. If you don't map those before you design cargo lanes, you're building infrastructure in the wrong place.
This is where a lot of well-intentioned urban design fails. Someone draws a cargo lane on a map because it looks logical from above, but the actual freight movement happens 2 streets over because that's where the grocery loading docks are. The lane sits empty and becomes ammunition for the "I told you it wouldn't work" crowd.
The framework is map first, design second. Figure out where the stuff actually goes, then build the lanes along those routes. The cargo lane isn't a decorative feature. It's functional infrastructure, and it has to follow the function.
The mapping doesn't require a city planning department. A motivated citizen with a notebook can do a rough version. Spend a morning counting delivery vehicles on different streets. Note where they stop, for how long, what they're delivering. The pattern emerges pretty quickly.
Daniel essentially did this accidentally. His move forced him to think about routes and obstacles and timing in a way that most people never do. Because most people just rent a van and sit in traffic. The hand truck made the problem visible.
That's the gift of the hand truck move, honestly. It takes a problem that's normally hidden inside a vehicle and makes it physical. You feel every curb, every crowd, every blocked passage. You can't ignore the design failure because you're pushing against it with your own body.
The cargo lane proposal is the answer to that felt experience. You're not imagining a utopia. You're solving a problem you physically encountered.
To bring it down to something a listener can actually do, if you're moving, get the hand truck, move early, scout the boring route. If you're an advocate, push for a one-block pilot with temporary bollards in real measurement. If you're neither, just start noticing where deliveries happen in your neighborhood. The cargo desire lines are probably not where you think they are. Where does this leave us? I think there's one big question we haven't answered. Would cargo lanes actually get us to fully car-free city centers, or would they just entrench car-like infrastructure in a different form?
That's the tension. On one hand, you're building something that looks a lot like a road. It's a linear right-of-way. It's got lanes. It's got rules about speed and passing. You could argue you've just reinvented the street, but with smaller vehicles.
The skeptical take is that once you've built the cargo lane, the pressure to let small electric vans use it would be enormous. It's just a slightly wider trolley. Then, slightly larger vans. Then you've got a road again.
The slippery slope from hand truck to pickup truck.
I think the counterargument is that the lane's physical dimensions are the safeguard. If you build it a meter and a half wide, a van literally can't fit. The width is the constraint. Venice's Cali don't get widened for convenience. The physical form enforces the rules.
That's the advantage of hard infrastructure over policy. A time restriction can be extended. A speed limit can be raised. A bollard can be removed. But a lane that's physically too narrow for a car is a permanent decision.
That's where the autonomous delivery robot angle gets interesting. Starship and Nuro and a dozen other companies are already deploying small ground robots for last mile delivery. They're about the width of a hand truck. They move at walking pace, and right now they're awkwardly sharing sidewalks with pedestrians.
I've seen those. They're like nervous little refrigerators.
They need dedicated space, not a road. They're too slow and too small for traffic, not a sidewalk. Pedestrians trip over them. They get stuck in crowds. They can't navigate around a tour group that stopped for photos. They need exactly the kind of cargo lane Daniel's describing.
The cargo lane becomes the default right-of-way for all non-passenger ground transport. Delivery robots, e-trolleys, hand trucks, cargo bikes, anything that's moving stuff rather than people.
That category is only going to grow. The number of autonomous delivery robots in operation is doubling every year. If we don't build space for them, they'll just colonize the sidewalk by default, and we'll have the same obstacle problem Daniel experienced, except the obstacles will be robots.
Which is somehow worse. At least tourists look apologetic when they block you.
The robot just sits there, blinking.
The cargo lane isn't just about today's deliveries. It's about getting ahead of a wave of small autonomous vehicles that are coming whether we plan for them or not.
That's the forward-looking case that I think could actually move city governments. It's not, let's build infrastructure for hand trucks. It's, let's build the right-of-way for the next generation of urban logistics, which happens to include hand trucks.
Which brings us back to Venice. Because the thing that's so striking about Daniel's story is that he ordered something from a global e-commerce platform to a city with no streets, and it arrived. Not as a novelty, not as a special accommodation. It just worked.
It's been working for centuries. Venice didn't design its logistics network for Amazon. It designed it for the movement of goods in a dense urban environment, and the design turned out to be adaptable to everything from crates of fish to cardboard boxes with smile logos.
Daniel's hand truck move was a small experiment in what that feels like. One person, one load, one route. The friction he hit, the tourists, the cars, the lack of a clear path, is the friction of a city that hasn't designed for what he's doing.
Venice has been running that experiment at city scale for hundreds of years. The answer it gives is, design for the movement of goods, physically separate it from the movement of people, and the system works. The canals are the cargo lanes. The fondamenta are the loading docks. The carrelli are the hand trucks. It's not a futuristic fantasy, it's a working model.
The question is whether we have the imagination to translate it to dry land.
I think Daniel's move proves we need to. And I think the autonomous delivery robots coming down the pipe are going to force the conversation whether we're ready or not.
Then let's check back in when the first cargo lane pilot launches somewhere. I want to see the data.
And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1970s, researchers studying volcanic vents in Patagonia's Cerro Hudson found that the gas plume's high hydrogen sulfide content made the eruption roar travel at a noticeably lower pitch than typical volcanic blasts. The heavier gas molecules literally dragged the sound waves down by nearly 2 octaves, making a mountain-scale explosion sound like a bass drum.
A bass drum volcano. This has been my weird prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, rate us 5 stars and tell a friend who's moving apartments. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. We'll catch you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.